Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Happy Monday morning to you, 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thank you for tuning in today. Hope you had a good weekend. I don't know, there was stuff going on, but mostly it was a chill weekend. Got a little pickleball in, a little pool time in. Yeah, it was good. How about you? Something fun. So my wife and I are in this weird transitional phase of life. I am 59, she's 56. We are close to retirement. She actually has 30 years in with the state. So she, I think it's SRS or state retirement, says URS, something like that. Anyway, she could retire and get a decent pension. I have worked in the private sector my whole career, and I have no pension. I have 401k money, but I don't have a pension, and which is where most of us are right nowadays. Not too many companies give out pensions anymore. But so we have our kids have all been married, and we're empty nesters. We have just the wife and I at home now, which is, you know, it's fantastic. Although I have to admit, there are times when we're kind of like, you know, what are we doing tonight? Well, nothing. No games, no recitals, no concerts, no nothing. Just us hanging out. And sometimes we'll bust out some games or watch a movie together. We actually watched Bonhoeffer over the weekend, which was, by the way, a fantastic movie. Didn't love the lead character, the actor they played that played Bonhoeffer. I thought he was okay, but the movie itself was well written, and the true life story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer was really good. But I'll talk about that in a minute. But I wanted to get back to the weird period my wife and I are in right now. So we're not quite retired. Or probably, I mean, my wife could retire any minute. I'm probably going to hang on another maybe 3 years or so, unless someone, unlike the candidates, nobody can run against me and take my job. I guess I don't think the boss would be too excited about hiring anybody in my place for a while, and hopefully that won't happen. But, I'm probably a few years out. Don't know how many. You know, my health hasn't been fantastic. I've been in the hospital a few times, and I've had this basically cellulitis to sepsis thing happen to me several times. And so, you know, on any evening, my wife and I listen, maybe we should retire right now and just start traveling and do some fun stuff, go around and do some different thing. I don't know what. But in the end, we talk about that, and we're like, well, yeah, after, what, 2-3 months of traveling, we're done traveling, we're tired of it, and then what? We can't go back to your job. Well, if you retire, you retire. You can't go back. And we talk about, okay, well, we need to take some vacations. And we are, by the way, next week, I will not be here. We will, I'm not sure if Mello's going to try to do some of the shows without me, or if they're just going to go straight satellite next Monday through Friday. I'm going to be up at Yellowstone, and this is so I have two vacations this summer. This one, the family everybody in the family headed up to Yellowstone together. I was staying and we rented a big house, like a lot of people do in St. George, only we're going north where it's cooler. And then later in this summer, in early August, going on a cruise, and that'll be fun as well. That will be just the wife and I, just my sweetheart and I. Okay, back to the weird transition. It's a weird time for us. We're not sure, you know, do we take time off? Do we, we're not retired yet, but we could, one reality is, and a lot of you know this, that are retired or are getting very close to retirement, the pay cut, right? Even with my wife's pension and our 401k and everything, we're going to make significantly less money than we make with both of us working full time. You know, the difference is going to be probably maybe we'll have half the income, a little more than half the income when, you know, maybe 60%, something like that, of what we have now, and that's going to be a little bit weird. So anyway, I guess I bring this up because I know some of you are close to what we're going through. Some of you went through what we're going through, and some of you are past that. And I'm always looking for advice. If you have ideas for me, text me at 435-467-5842. All right, I hate to talk about this kind of thing because it, you know, but I want to talk about the death penalty for a minute. I know there are some of you out there who are, yeah, death penalty, get the bad guy. There are some of you out there who are like, I'm not sure. Meh. And then there are those of you that are just anti-death penalty. Why would we do this? You know, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That was the Moses law. That was, you know, why are we killing people who killed people? That just doesn't make sense. It's like spanking a toddler for hitting his, you know, hitting his brother. Well, honestly, it kind of works. The death penalty, and it does, I believe somewhere in someone's mind who is thinking about committing heinous crimes, they have to, in the back of their mind, go, man, I don't want to go to prison. And then beyond that, man, I really don't want to be on death row. I don't want to be executed for my crimes. So I'm going to talk about a couple of them. First of all, in Utah, there's a guy by the name of Ralph Leroy Menzies, who has been on death row for, let's see, 88. So what is that, 37 years on death row? He is currently scheduled to be executed by firing squad in the state of Utah. And first of all, we'll play the sympathy side. Should you feel bad for Menzies? He is suffering from early stage dementia. He has some breathing difficulties, whereas he has to wear oxygen at all times. He has he's in a wheelchair. He can't walk. And I don't know about you, but the what is he, 67-year-old Menzies doesn't seem like a real great candidate for death row, right? I mean, here's a guy who's, you know, he's not in good shape anyway. He's got lung problems. He's got dementia. He's got all kinds of problems. So, you know, on that side of it, you go, why are we going to make a guy unhook his oxygen and get out of his wheelchair and then shoot him? I mean, that doesn't make sense, right? On the other hand, let me tell you what Ralph did. First of all, Ralph was habitual criminal. He was a guy that was in and out of jail from the age of 18 on. When he was 18, aggravated robbery, 5 to life. Got out 2 years later on parole. He escaped from prison at one point. A week later, was caught. He robbed and shot a taxi driver with a shotgun. The case was declared a mistrial. The taxi driver didn't die, so he didn't get charged with murder, but attempted murder. Anyway, a mistrial got that dismissed. In 79, he was given another 5 years to life for another aggravated robbery. Again, this guy, so he's not even, at this point, he's 20 years old. He's been in and out of prison 3 times. He's committed violent crimes. He shot a guy, assuming he was going to die. The guy didn't die. In 1980, he was in prison again for another aggravated robbery. He was paroled in 84. In 85, he stole a bunch of... Now, I know this isn't death penalty worthy, but he stole a bunch of Christmas decorations from someone's yard, for crying out loud. So he was sentenced to prison again in 86. He bailed out on February 20th, 10 days later. Not sure where he got the bail money, but he bailed out in 86. On February 20th, 1986, Menzies bailed out of jail. On February 23rd, 1986, Menzies took his car to a gas station, put gas in his vehicle, even though he knew he didn't have money to pay for it. When he went inside the store, he found a lone female gas station attendant. Now, we're not talking about the 50s or the 30s. This was 1986. I was a missionary at the time, but... Menzies took the woman in his car, forced her in his car at gunpoint, took her purse, took all the money and credit cards and everything out of her purse, The woman by the by the name of Maureen Hunsaker, a young married lady with children. No, I don't think she had kids. That's a different story. That's the other story I'm going to get to in a minute. Anyway, okay, so he kidnaps Maureen Hunsaker, takes her up the canyon in the mountains, and did who knows what to her. They found all kinds of evidence of all this. Anyway, so this is 11 o'clock at night. Jim Hunsaker, that's Maureen's husband, calls over to the gas station. She's not answering the phone. He's like, oh, that's weird. She usually answers. So he decides she's due to get off in the next little while, but he can't figure out why. And, you know, obviously a husband worried about his wife working alone at a gas station in case some creep were to come along, which unfortunately happened this time. Anyway, goes to the gas station and finds her purse empty. All the money and everything had been taken out of it. But he doesn't find Maureen. She's gone. An officer, Jim then calls the police. Officer comes over. He tries Maureen's cell phone. She had one of those brick phones. Yeah. I mean, this was the late 80s. She answered the phone and said that she was being kidnapped and she had been robbed and she was being assaulted. But before they could ask any further questions, the phone call was cut off. 2 days later, on February 25th, 1986, near the Storm Mountain Picnic Area in Big Cottonwood Canyon, a hiker discovered the body of Maureen Hunsaker, whose neck was slit and wrists were riddled with marks, suggesting she was tied up. It was presumed she was tied to a nearby tree before her death. Given that the bark of the tree was scuffed, an autopsy report showed that Hunsaker died as a result of ligature strangulation and the slit wound caused by a knife had a contributory effect on her death. So, as we're feeling sorry for Ralph Menzies and his, you know, being on oxygen, early stage dementia, wheelchair, feel sorry for him. Who felt sorry for Maureen Hunsaker? Not Ralph. Well, he didn't feel bad at all. He murdered her in cold blood. He strangled her, and then he wasn't sure she was dead, so he slit her throat. He kidnapped her from a gas station because he found nobody else was around. Nobody will see me steal this woman. He stole all her stuff. Yeah. I just, you know, I know a lot of people. In fact, maybe you, who think the death penalty is, you know, it's not right. We shouldn't kill people for doing something wrong. But you've got to think about the victim. Everybody's talking about Ralph Menzies. It's all over the news, all over Salt Lake News and, you know, the news websites. But nobody's talking about Maureen Hunsaker, the 26-year-old woman who was murdered in cold blood by lifetime criminal Ralph Menzies, who felt bad for Maureen. Menzies was convicted in 1988, 2 years after the crime was committed. A month later, he was sentenced to death, but he had, since then, appealed and appealed and appealed and appealed. I mean, I'm looking at the list right now. There's a section in here, different appeals, 2014, 2019, 2012, 2004, 96, 94, 95. And then we go later to 2022, 2023. 2024, the state lawyers of Utah announced they were seeking an execution date for Menzies, who had exhausted his appeal process. Menzies was allowed to choose his manner of death. Lethal injection or firing squad. He chose firing squad. And then he told his lawyer, he said, look, it's cruel and unusual punishment to make me unhook my oxygen and remove me from my wheelchair and have me shot. That's cruel and unusual, and Utah shouldn't be allowed to do that. How can someone that was so merciless, so cruel, so evil, appeal for mercy from the court. And mercy would literally rob justice in this point, in this case. According to Matt Hunsaker, the son of Maureen Hunsaker, so she did have kids, okay. He appreciated the court's diligence for making a swift ruling in the case, and his family hoped to see Menzies executed soon for murdering his mother. It's a statement he made in the Salt Lake media. He is still not been executed, but it should be coming soon, I hope. Everybody's like, Andy, oh, that's terrible. What are you talking about? You hope somebody gets murdered? You hope somebody gets killed? In this case, yeah. Ralph Menzies deserves to die and pay for what he did to Maureen Hunsaker. There's another case making national news right now that I think may be somewhat related in that there's murder involved. And when they catch the guy, and by the way, they have not caught the guy yet, I think he should be put on death row. Guy's name is Travis Decker. Travis Decker killed his three daughters. Going through a divorce with his wife. And as happens often in divorce, they're given joint custody, or the mom was given custody but with visitation rights to the dad. And so Travis Decker, it was his turn to have the kids. Travis Decker took the three kids and... This is tough to talk about. He killed them by tying them up and putting plastic bags and tying plastic bags over their heads, their faces, and watching them smothered, die, not be able to breathe. It's unbelievable how anybody could do that to anyone, much less his own daughters. There's cries for mercy. First of all, they haven't caught the guy. This happened in Washington State, and they believe he has abandoned his vehicle and is walking somewhere along the famed Pacific Crest Trail. Although there was evidence of blood handprints, bloody handprints on his vehicle, so maybe he tried to harm himself. They haven't found him yet, anyway. Not that far away, Washington State, heading along the Oregon Trail, perhaps. But Travis Decker, who killed his kids, Peyton, who is 9, Evelyn, who is 8, and Olivia, who is 5. Cute, cute little blonde girls. Is still at large. But they're calling, even his ex-wife is like, man, I'm mad at him, but he suffered from PTSD. He suffered with mental health issues. She stopped short of saying it wasn't his fault, but she's saying the system failed him. They should have given him more help. This is a lawyer said he had some mental health issues and some instability in his life that really led to the restriction as far as overnight visitation of him taking him out of the area. But other than that, he loved those girls very much, and him and Whitney were able to communicate on a regular basis, not just as co-parents, but as friends. Really? By the way, only two of the three girls were blonde. The third one was brown-haired, but for the record. The couple had been married for 10 years. After meeting online, Decker had been serving in the Air Force in Washington. Anyway, so what do you think should happen to Travis Decker? They will catch him, and maybe he's committed suicide, so maybe they'll catch him and he'll be dead. But if they catch him and he's alive, do you feel in your heart that he should be... They're going to go with the mental health problem. They're going to say he was clinically insane when he did what he did, that he was out of his mind, he was suffering from PTSD, that he didn't know what he was doing. And I would submit to you that no matter how much mental stress that guy was under, there is a compass, a conscience inside of all of us. If you're religious, a light of Christ inside every person. And that helps you know what is right and wrong. And murdering somebody is the biggest wrong. You can't. Come on, really? Do you think PTSD could excuse him murdering his own children? Sorry, not doing it. I'm not going there. And if you ask me, if they catch him alive, he should be immediately put on on death row. He should be, I don't think there's any doubt he did it. They found the bodies of the girls in his truck, asphyxiated to death, tied up. I don't think there's any doubt he did it. Now it's a matter of what kind of defense. And if the insanity plea, whatever, they may just get him off. He may not be on death row. He won't get away with it, but he may not pay like I believe he should pay, which is with his own life. It's a sad story. Execute Menzies. If they catch Decker, execute him too. That's my opinion. And right now we're taking a break. I'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 934 on KDXU. Sorry for the depressing topic this morning, talking about death row murderers and things like that, yeah. Right now, Utah currently has 4 people on death row. The numbers that might shock you are the amount of time they've been on death row. Michael Anthony Archuleta, who kidnapped, raped, tortured, and murdered 28-year-old Gordon Church on November 21st, 1988, has been on death row 35 and a half years. Troy Kell is a special one, man. He killed somebody, was sentenced to jail for killing somebody. And while he was in jail, he killed somebody else. Yeah, he stabbed fellow inmate Lonnie Blackman 67 times in 1994. He's been on death row for 28 years, almost 29. Vaughn Lester Taylor murdered 49-year-old KTD and her mother, 76-year-old Beth Potts. He's been on death row for 34 years and 15 months. They've been on the death row a long time, those people. And then, of course, Ralph Menzies, I mentioned, in the longest, 37 years, he's been on death row. All right, let's go to the phone lines. I know some folks have some thoughts on this. Yeah, go ahead.
Morning, Andy.
Morning.
It's a subject that is long overdue. Why do we let these guys stay on death row forever?
Yeah.
Especially, my opinion, there's no doubt. Now, recently, we've had that guy who murdered the 2 people in the Jewish synagogue.
Yeah.
Admitted to it. My answer, take the sucker out and hang him publicly and be done with it. Same way with that guy who shot that CEO. They admit to it. There's evidence. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Just pay the lawyers millions and millions and let these guys around for, like, this Huntsaker lady who got murdered, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the excuse? Get rid of these people. They're terrible people. I don't understand it. It's just wasting the taxpayers' money and lawyers get rich, you know. And
oh, yeah. Yeah.
The guilty and the innocent, you know. How do you get over it, you know, when they know this guy's still alive after what he did to your mom or something?
39 years ago is when he committed that. Well, 39 years ago. He's been on death row 37 years. She was 26.
There's no closure for the family. Unless
no.
That guy, you know, he's still living.
And everybody wants us to feel sorry for him now. Oh, he's on oxygen. They shouldn't shoot him. He's on oxygen. Poor guy. I don't feel bad for him.
And what did our illustrious last president do in his final days?
Yeah.
He got a lot of these death row people off death row and just put them in life in prison, you know. So
yeah, commuted their sentence. Yeah, it's terrible.
I don't understand it, you know. My philosophy, I remember the High Five murders. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I wrote a story about it. It's awful. Maybe the worst crime ever in Utah.
Yeah, they drink Drano and all this stuff, no doubt. And, you know, how many of them actually got executed and died of old age, you know. It's just...
Yeah. Yeah, you're
right. I don't know. You got to do something different about it because there's got to be a deterrent for the evilness these people do. And then we got all these illegals, you know, and here's your downcast wine. and we're trying to get them out of a country or put them in jail. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Hey, appreciate the phone call today.
Thanks, Andy. Good subject.
Talk to you later. Got a text just now. Death row is definitely a good punishment for these monsters, except for these blood-sucking lawyers and judges appeal their sentences. And that's really why they're on death row so long. Appeal after appeal after appeal after appeal. In the case, so the one guy, this Troy Kell guy that's on death row, been on death row for almost 29 years. He murdered somebody, was convicted. Now remember, when you're convicted, we don't even in the media, we don't have to say alleged anymore. We say convicted murderer, or we just say murderer. No longer, because they've been convicted. It's established as fact. Anyway, this Kell guy was convicted of killing James Kelly, who had supposedly, he killed him because he didn't like the way he looked at his friend's daughter or something. I don't know. Anyway. But while in jail, he stabbed an inmate. So they're sharing, right? They're sharing a cell together. The guard comes in, and the other guy in the cell has been stabbed 67 times. You say, well, I didn't do that. Somebody else did that. You were the only one in the cell with him. Either you did it or he did it himself. 67 times. I don't know anybody that could commit suicide by stabbing themselves 67 times. No, it doesn't happen. Anyway, so this guy's been on death row for 29 years almost, and I'm not sure. I mean, you throw appeals out. Why? Why? If he did it, you have proof. It's like the caller was saying. Just go ahead and take care of business. You might say, well, that's cold-hearted. Well, it is, but is it okay that he did what he did? You think about, the one guy, Taylor, on death row, killed a lady and her mom, both. And they shot the husband who happened to, they shot him and set him on fire and he lived. They kidnapped their two daughters. This guy and his partner, Taylor and his partner's name was Deli. And, people are like, it's cruel now. He's old now. You can't, he's like in his 70s. You can't kill him now. I don't know. I guess I just don't get it sometimes. So, and like I said, if they catch this Decker guy, I hope they throw the book at him and throw the book. So he can sit on death row for 30 years before they kill him. I don't know. All right. Big in the news today, obviously, what's going on in L.A. I'll read you the news story straight. Tensions are high in parts of Los Angeles after several days of protests against the Trump administration's immigration crackdown in the city. Thousands were on the streets Sunday for protests. In other spots, tensions flared as police used tear gas, rubber bullets. Have you seen some of the video yet, by the way? And other less than lethal methods to try to control the crowds. President Trump has sent out the National Guard. Some are saying, Gavin Newsom saying that he shouldn't do that, but President Trump fired back and said, if you had done your job at controlling your population in California, I wouldn't have to send in the National Guard. Yeah, California screwed. The weird thing about California, it's not very far from here. It feels like a different world. It almost, when they say there are riots in L.A., it almost feels like when they say there's a missile strike in Gaza. It feels far away from me in St. George, Utah. But California is actually really close. You can, if traffic wasn't a factor, you could be in L.A. in 6 hours driving, in an hour or less flying. It's not very far away. I hope none of that spills over. Geographically it's not that far away, but I don't know. Socially it is as far as the Gaza Strip. But a lot of crazy stuff going on. I saw this note. This actually surprised me a little bit. Let's see if I can find it again. Maybe I'll just read it to you if I can find it. Oh, here we go. How about this? Elon Musk is backing President Trump's stance on immigration issues in California. The tech billionaire shared a screenshot of a Truth Social post from Trump who slammed Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom and L.A. Mayor Karen Bass for their handling of protests against recent federal immigration raids. Musk also shared a post from Vice President Vance who wrote, quote, "This moment calls for decisive leadership. The president will not tolerate rioting and violence," and included two American flag emojis in the repost. The repost comes just days after he clashed with the president on social media over the what he called bloated big beautiful bill. So me, this is terrible, but maybe it takes riots in LA to get a couple of billionaires to be friends again. I don't know. It kind of cracks me up a little bit. Maybe they can let bygones be bygones while they try to deport some murderers and gangbangers from California, and the L.A. people freaking out everywhere. I don't know. Okay, a couple of other news items. I've got to get a break in as well. Maybe we're going to lighten things up a little bit. Friday was a deadline for candidates to file for office, and there were some interesting developments in St. George. You got Michelle Randall and Jimmy Hughes. We knew that, right? Michelle and Jimmy, they ran against each other before, Michelle winning it fairly close. But the two will have to live through a primary first because two other candidates filed. A guy by the name of Brandon Racco, R-A-C-O, or Racco, Racco. I don't know who that is. But I do know this. The other candidate is a guy by the name of Eros Mackey. Eros is famously a guy here in town who I would call him a bit of an influencer, and he's a guy who is very, very, very conservative. I'm not going to say right wing. I don't like that word or that phrase, but he's a guy that's very conservative. And I had said again early on, I said, look, it's going to be Michelle and Jimmy unless somebody with a big name, somebody already with a following, enters a race. And I expect, you know, maybe it's someone who already held office in Utah, you know, like a Don Ipsen type person, or maybe, I don't know, somebody with some kind of public persona, you know, big time radio or TV type person. Not me, by the way. I'm out. Forget it. And I think Eros Mackey might fit that bill. But again, there will be a primary now because there are now four candidates for mayor in St. George. There will be a primary in August, and the two of the four that make it through the primary will then run for mayor in November. In Washington City, I thought this was fascinating. Apparently, Washingtonians, Washington Cityites, whatever you want to call them, are happy with Crest Saley because not one person filed for mayor candidacy, except for Crest Daly. He will run unopposed, which means he is the mayor again for four more years. I thought that was really fascinating. Santa Clara's mayor, Rick Rosenberg, is stepping down. Jarrett Waite and Ben Shakespeare are the two guys that filed for that spot. And Ivins, Chris Hart, is stepping down at the end of his term in November. And the new mayor will be Kevin Smith because Kevin is the only one who filed for the candidacy. No one else and Ivins has like 9,000 residents, something like that. Nobody filed for the mayor job. And then one last, I think, big development in Hurricane. Kind of felt like Nanette was like Crest Daly. She was cruising along. The public liked her. Everything seemed great. But maybe not, because three other people filed to run against Nanette for the mayor job in Hurricane. Rick Crow, Gary Sanders, and Clark Fawcett. I don't know those gentlemen. I think I met one or two of them, but I don't know them at all, so I don't know anything about them. But Nanette Billings will, in her attempt to gain a second term, will have a fight on her hands with Crow, Sanders, and Fawcett also running. Very interesting. 947 now on KDXU.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Hi, I'm Andy, 950 now on KDXU. Yeah, we're getting right down to it. So if you'd like to text me, 435-467-5842. You can always call in 673-5890. I'm going to ask, all week long, I'm going to be asking for help. Okay, so I haven't been to Yellowstone in 40, I think I was 16, 43 years. I don't know anything about Yellowstone, except for, I mean, we've been doing research and stuff. I hear the Mesa Falls Scenic Loop is amazing. There's some hikes there and stuff. So if you are a Yellowstone person, if you're like into Yellowstone, you know stuff to do there, you're excited about it, text me some ideas, please. 435-467-5842. If you have some Yellowstone advice for me, we are going to do some hikes, but keep in mind there are certain things. First of all, money is an issue. I'm a radio guy. I don't have that much money. So we won't be doing like super expensive stuff. And I'm not a fisherman. My buddy was like, it's a crime to go to Yellowstone and not fish. Well, maybe, but I'm not a fisherman, so I won't be fishing. So, but if you have other ideas of things that are relatively inexpensive, please text me at 467-5842. We are going next week. It'll be a family vacation, so we're inviting all our children and their spouses and grandchildren, although my one son with four kids said he can't come, so... basically, because we had a wedding, he had to take time off for that, and he's got a job. He can only take so many days off, and then your boss starts going, "Hey, you can," that kind of thing. So, anyway, I will be gone again next week. I'm not sure what they're going to do in this time slot. If Mello's going to try to do some shows, if we're going to run some best of Andy Griffin Show stuff, or if we're just going to run some satellite, well, I'll let you know as I find out. The whole death row thing, just why they're on for 30 and 40 years, I don't get it, My wife, I hate to do this to her, but my wife said murder suicides are awful things, but at least he killed himself, too. Save the state some money, I guess. I don't know. All right, going to change gears for just a minute. Only have 7 or 8 minutes left. I want to talk about screen time. So... recently spent time at my son's house. He has four kids, I mentioned before, but there are two things going on there that one, I'm encouraged by, the other I was a little bit troubled by. Number one, they have a big screen TV in their main room where the kids play and stuff, and that thing has always got either Miss Rachel on or some kind of music video or some kind of like Bluey cartoons. 24/7. I don't know that I've ever been to their house where something wasn't playing on that. That has created this weird environment in that the kids, sometimes they'll sit and watch it if it's something really fascinating to them, but they have, because it's always on, they have actually, I think, tuned it out. It might be on, but they don't even notice it anymore. That's the kind of the disturbing thing. I'm a little disappointed that the screen is always on. But the good thing is I spent a couple of full days at my son's house, and the kids wanted to read books. They wanted to play with toys. They wanted to put Legos together. There were no iPads. There were no... I loved it. I loved the fact that these four kids, two of them are 5 years old twins and two of them are 2 year old twins, had no interest in screen time, had no interest in iPads or the TV, or they wanted to play with toys. And that made me feel happy. I was like, yeah, that's nice. I like that. In fact, my granddaughter's favorite activity was going to get a book and having Pops read. And I'll bet I read 50 maybe different kids' books over this past weekend when I was up in Salt Lake. And some of them were really dumb and some of them were really good. And I got to know the Hungry Caterpillar very well again. Hungry Caterpillar and I are tight. We're really close. But I was encouraged by that. It made me very happy that these kids were choosing. Now, I know things are going to change when they're teenagers. Screens are going to be very important, et cetera. But I was very encouraged by the idea that They didn't need the screens. They didn't want the screens. They wanted to play. They wanted to sit on my lap and read stories. They wanted to get on the ground and assemble Legos. My one grandson was so obsessed with trying to put this car together. We had to find the right tires and the right axle, and it was awesome. I loved it. And by the way, Legos are hard. some of those Lego things you got to put together now, like, wow, if I didn't have an instructions, I would be toast. But give that being said, I don't think all kids are that way. Good article put together on Deseret.com by a lady by the name of Amy Winder Newton. You say, I have heard that name. Yeah, Amy is a senior advisor to the governor. She's the director of the Utah Office of Families, and she is also a Salt Lake County Council member. So she cares about families a lot. She cares about kids a lot. I like that. And anyway, she put out a list of guidelines that can help every parent, caregiver, and teacher foster healthier habits around screens. I have 4 minutes to give you the guidelines. Number one, protect face-to-face time. Make sure that's a priority for you. Make rule. We had a rule in our house, no phones at the kitchen table. We ate dinner together and we talked to each other. You've got to be vigilant. You've got to say, no, this, you know, for us, it was, you know, there were certain times you could be, you know, screen time, okay. Other times where no screens, period. Create screen-free zones in your home. Be a role model. In other words, don't be addicted to the phone yourself. If they see you on your phone all the time, guess what they're going to do? Exactly the same thing, yep. And then set clear and consistent limits. I wrote up a contract that my kids each had to sign. When I was getting them a phone, I said, here are the rules. If you cannot keep these rules, you cannot have a phone. And I remember one son, he went, I'll sign that. You know, he didn't even read it. I said, no, no. I want you to read this first. Because I don't want to, in a month, a week, a year, whatever, you to come to me and say, oh, I didn't know that. I want you to be cognizant and aware of every single one of these rules. And then when I go and take your phone away, you say, why are you doing that? I can just pull this contract up that he signed, and I can say, see number 7 right there on the contract? You're breaking that consistently, and the phone's mine now. I'm paying for it anyway. It always was mine, I guess. All right, as far as setting limits, this is Amy. Amy Newton suggests this. Number one, to up to a year and a half, don't even, there's no need to, for them to even have a screen, period. The only time maybe it would be okay is if you're FaceTiming grandma, right? Or pops. Or Gigi. And then from 18 months to 2 years, really the only screen time they need is if maybe you're teaching them language, you're teaching them things, educational stuff. From 2 to 5 years, no more than 1 hour a day. I'm talking iPads, we're not talking phones. And then 6 years up, no more than 2 hours a day with clear rules on content and purpose. Amy suggests some resources for you. Number one, vroom.org. It's a free app and website full of brain-building activities. So you say, hey, how can I get, you know, educational activities for my kid or grandkid? Well, go to vroom.org. There are some really good, and they're fun games. They're not going to look at it and go, oh, this is boring, this sucks. No, they're actually pretty cool games. Another website, strongerfamilies.utah.gov, has a whole bunch of tips and resources for us. The thing that parents, I hope, will understand is you're not alone. I think sometimes as a parent you feel that way. You're like, I mean, I've called my parents and they, I don't even know what to do. This happened with my kid, and give me some advice here. I don't know what to do, but... yeah, it's one of those things. You're not alone. You have help. There's tons of help online. Tons of help. And again, that website, Stronger Families, that's a plural, families, strongerfamilies.utah.gov. And, yeah, none of us are perfect as parents and grandparents, but if we can put a dent in some of what's happening to our kids, the apprehension, anxiety, tension, panic attacks. A lot of it, I would say most of it, is because of those dang phones. And it's up to you as parents to make sure that they can get through all that. Out of time. Steve Dunham's on tomorrow. Talk to you then.